to show success.
Show with Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, proudly broadcasting around the world live from the future. Very, very glad about yesterday. It was pretty rough. I did 5 hours of radio yesterday. We did the Vinnie Eastwood Show with Will and we had some interesting talks about the earthquake and the incidental signings of or forums. Rather, discussing Trans-Pacific partnerships to enslave the bulk of the country to foreign interests and incrementally, of course, amalgamate us into some description of Pacific Rim superstate with a number of other nations, about nine or so, for the administrative convenience of scumbags that are very high up and control the banking interests, you know, families like the Rothschilds, Rockefellers, DuPonts, Saudi royal families. You know, people look at these people as if the people who have bazillions of dollars and all the money they could ever want, they assume that they'd stop at wanting money. No, they don't stop at that. It does not stop there. Because once you have all the money in the world, what's the next logical step? You'd want all the power in the world, wouldn't you? You want it all for yourself. Or maybe just for you and a clique of cronies. So you can exterminate the bulk of humanity and use that frickin' planet as your little playpen with nobody else around. It's all yours and just a few million slaves left to do your bidding. Have guns and stuff like that just to subdue them. And basically, you just get to be a tyrant for the rest of eternity. All the technology for yourself, all the resources for yourself. It'd be quite lovely if you were a sociopath and didn't give a flying F about the rest of humanity. Like me. A joke. Because it's not funny, really. Sometimes, when you think about people dying, I think in the Christchurch quake. And the news keeps updating the numbers every day. It's now day 5 of the quake. It is now 128th body that has been found. There's now 220 more are missing. It's a mathematical process to them. They don't understand human impact. Do they? All they understand is how facile and how fabulous mainstream media can be. That's all they get. Where is the investigation going on here? Why is it that all of a sudden there's no stories coming out of the rest of the country about anything except other than the quake? You turn on any radio station, any television station, there's nothing but the quake. People calling in about the quake. People getting rung up about the quake. It's unbelievable. It is absolutely everywhere. It is domination quake central in this country because the media are such lazy scum that the one thing that they decided is great to do is keep everybody in one place and only report on one thing. That's a piece of cake. You're on mainstream media and we don't care. We'll be right back. away. Fabulous Judy. Judy, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, it's been a few years now since 9/11, and a lot of speculation has come out about what actually caused the destructions. There have been a lot of theories, but because there has been no real investigation, one that hasn't been blocked, one that is scientifically backed and reviewed, it still resolves to simple speculation. But we're going to hope to change that here today with you, Dr. Judy Wood, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks. One correction. There has been one investigation.
It wasn't a real investigation, though, was it?
No, there was one. It was not done by a government agency. There's only one comprehensive investigation to date, and that is the one that I've done. And based on what I found, I filed a federal QI-TAM case for accountability based on science fraud conducted by the contractors on the NIST report. It was scientific fraud. So there was an investigation, but it was not conducted by NIST. And when I confronted NIST about...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
When I confronted NIST about this, they acknowledged, indeed, they had not investigated the collapse.
Now, that's the one thing that's been left out. And indeed, even out of the official 9/11 report, Building 7 was completely left out as well. So there's a lot of missing pieces to the puzzle, aren't there? There's a lot of complexity to this, which is why your book, as I understand you told me, has 500 pages and some of 800 color photos of varying sizes and descriptions. So it is one of the most comprehensive works on the collapse of the towers on 9/11. And it just begs the question, I mean, if this is so comprehensive, what is it that you've found that others have not?
The evidence. Others do not address the evidence, and all of the evidence must be addressed in order to determine what happened. You first don't begin with who done it. You first begin with what got done and how it got done. And from the beginning, most folks who have gotten into this have gone after the who part of it, which is totally irrelevant until you know what got done. For example, if you come upon a dead body and you see somebody standing over it with a smoking gun, and you charge them with murder, you know, from shooting somebody to death, and you take them to court, what happens if it turns out the shooter had actually, the speculated shooter had actually poisoned the person to death? What you would do is be letting them off scot-free for life due to the double jeopardy issue. So you have to charge them with the correct crime. You can't say they shot him to death when there's no bullet holes in the body. Didn't mean they didn't kill him, but you have to charge him with the right crime. So by immediately stringing somebody up for shooting somebody, you know, with a gun, and there's no bullet holes in the body, that's a criminal's, you know, dream.
Well, let's talk about this then, because the towers had the planes fly into them at like 9 and 10 a.m. in the morning, respectively-ish.
Already you've made an assumption.
Oh, exactly.
So what you need to start out with is first observe what evidence you do have and try as hard as you can to not bias your observations. And by assuming that what you were told on TV was correct, and just making that assumption, you're already off in assumption land.
Well, the thing is, you kind of go by best guess, don't you? And if somebody presents contrary evidence to what I've been told on TV, and it looks fairly credible, then of course I'll reevaluate the situation, because there's no point going believing something contrary to evidence. And indeed, if you look in the dictionary, that is the very definition of delusional.
Right. And so right away you start out with the planes flew into the building. You haven't, you know, verified that in any way, have you?
I expect not. I haven't gone to them personally myself. I've seen pictures that have been broadcast on mainstream media and websites on the internet and been commented on by thousands of people and commentators all over the world. Yes.
But where is the evidence for an airplane other than hearsay?
There were two black boxes taken away by the FBI, reportedly. So apparently there must have been some description of flying implement there that had a black box at least, unless, of course, they just brought them in from the outside and just planted them to take them later, like the little passport that somehow survived a fireball, you know, and it's like they can bring in or take away evidence at will kind of thing. So it gives rise to a lot of speculation, and the difficulty is, for a layman, speculation is a lot of what you have and basic evidence, but we require people to present that evidence because we're not researchers, we're not documenters or anything of that nature, so we rely on the expertise of other parties. Now, my personal belief is that if you're going to rely on experts, rely on the experts that debunk the experts that you've already heard of. You know, try to listen to things that you haven't heard before first and foremost, rather than repeating what you've already learned.
Yeah, that's one possibility, but that, you know, there's an awful lot of this theme out there of debunking debunkers who debunk debunkers of debunking whatever, and it goes way from. You don't look at the evidence anymore.
Exactly. You know, it's opinion versus opinion, and that now passes for evidence these days.
And then there's going to be more evidence, and, you know, it's pretty soon evidence equals speculation equals, and it changes all sorts of meanings. I am, portrayed as no evidence and all speculation. But nobody can show where anything in my book is speculation. So do they understand the difference between evidence and speculation? Maybe they've been confused by now.
And Well, and that's the interesting thing. It's like the fog of war, isn't it? I mean, was 9/11 or was 9/11 not, at the very least, a false flag terrorism attack?
I'm not going to go as far as to say exactly what it is or what the motivations were. But what we were presented does not agree with the evidence. And
so specifically, what evidence are you talking about? What evidence have you got that a plane didn't fly into the buildings?
Well, you know, the planes don't make cookie-cutter cutouts. I'm saying a normal plane contacting a normal wall do not result in what we have as evidence of the building. The thing that got me on that day was the upper right wingtip of the South Tower. It's like a 5-inch deep slot, tall slot that goes like right through the outer columns and through the steel columns. Now, if aluminum wingtips are that good of a cutter, why don't they use them on lathes and, you know, other things like that? You know.
Because it's a weak metal and it's light. It's meant to be carrying things around, not putting up with punishment. That's what you use steel for.
And it can't even carry fuel out there in the very wingtip. It just has that little light, you know, that flashes on and off out there at the end. I'm surprised they don't have a silhouette where the, you know, the little light goes. but it's you know, it doesn't make sense, and the hole is not as big as Boeing 767.
Well, specifically, I mean, if you're talking evidence, what dimensions is a Boeing 767, and then what dimensions is the building mark on it?
Yeah, I don't focus so much on, you know, all of these details, but, you know, just for starters, that slot that is not made by a wingtip, and you look at the hole and you don't see plane parts there. You don't see them down the pavement. Come to think of it, there's no identifiable plane parts that have been reported in evidence, and I deal with evidence.
Now, in Operation Northwoods, one of the scenarios that they would use is another false flag terrorism attack against Cuba. They would blow up a civilian airliner over Cuban waters to start a war. And before they actually launched that airliner, they would divert one that's currently in the air, switch transponders, and then send a drone out blown up. Now, that was back in the 60s under Operation Northwoods during, was it Kennedy's reign, I believe? And I think that there's still that sort of element being behind a lot of interesting world events, you know?
Yeah,
particularly those related to terrorism, explosions, or anything like that. You often see, if you look at the evidence, a dark hand that doesn't fit the official story.
Correct. The official story that we're told doesn't match the evidence, but it's hard to jump from there to, you know, the whodunit part, because there's a whole lot of motivation for, you know, for example, whoever's organized the NIST to investigate, quote, pretend to investigate the, quote, collapse. There's a lot of motivation to have them covered up. It doesn't say who did it. And if you think about it, you know, this is classified technology. Somebody's classified technology. If the U.S. does not have this classified technology, would they want the world to know that?
You know, who knows? It depends if they wanted to scare the living daylights out of everybody in order to justify it as a pretext to taking everybody's rights away, perhaps.
Now, that's a lot of, like, you know, guesswork. Well, you could also say that...
it's not guesswork. It happens all the time. That's what governments do. They always use bad events to take people's rights away from them.
Yeah.
You know, like during World War II, when all the Japanese, even U.S. citizens, got rounded up and put into friggin' concentration camps.
But in a tennis match, you trick the other player into going left when you hit the ball right, you know, and you take advantage of a weakness. That's what governments do. That's what people do. That's you know, human nature.
Well, the last tennis match I went to, I watched five activists get arrested for blowing whistles.
Oh, okay. The whistleblowers.
Oh, yep. Yes, because they were protesting an Israeli tennis player, Shahar Peer, of course. Don't you just love it how your government just all of a sudden gets uppity if you protest Israel's genocidal campaign against Palestine?
Well, here's another scenario. This is, you know, hypothetical. But let's say you're one of a handful of people, like five people, who want to take over the United States. If you just walk in the front door with your machine guns, you won't last long. The U.S. military will get you.
Well, that's because your enemy is obvious, and one of the most interesting aspects of warfare I find is actually finding out who the real enemy is and whether or not there are enemies from within. Disinformation and shillism, if that's even a word.
Exactly. So let's say you're this group of people who want to take over the U.S. So how about if you poof the towers? That's when I say poof, you know, turns to dust. And then you start a truth movement to destroy the country from within. And then after it's kind of undermined and destroyed the country enough, you just walk in there and they're happy to have any new leader, anything different than what they currently have. That's a very simplified story, but that's a possibility.
Well, yeah, and that smacks of relevance in this day and age because of, for example, the Egypt Revolution, where they've subtracted a CIA-sponsored dictator for 30 years, and now they have fabulous military rule who have been all trained by the CIA to support their dictator.
Yeah, see, you have to leave open the door for all sorts of scenarios. But that is why I work alone, because then you don't have to wonder, you know, who you're working with. And someone once told me, you travel light, you travel fast. You can get things accomplished. I started out gullible and naive and walked in the front door of the trap, Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And, I learned pretty quickly. And when I was questioning about certain pieces of evidence, I was booted out.
Have you noticed that happening with a little few movements? For example, a guy named Louis B. Got kicked out of We Are Change New York for demanding accounting accountability with regard to Luke Rutkowski. And apparently it was later found out that Luke Rutkowski was embezzling money and was kicked out of We Are Change.
Right. You're not, thou shalt not question. Well, I was questioning just the evidence. The buildings turned to dust. Why isn't anyone talking about this? And then how do you know there's airplanes? You know, I was questioning about the airplanes, and I was booted out. But that's when I really started, you know, that was a blessing in disguise. Hey, I got to start functioning on my own and start doing some real damage.
Yeah.
You know, nobody controlling me. And that was a very good lesson. I was naive at the beginning of this. I assumed people were, you know, all honest and saying what their aims were and whatnot. But from then on, I don't belong to groups.
Yeah, I mean, when you belong to a group, it means you're prone to groupthink, which is never a good idea, because an individual on their own can really come up with some pretty amazing stuff if they're given a little bit of space to explore it. And I think it's like once you realize how gifted you are as a person, that's when you can start to reintegrate and you can associate with people. But I I'd never want to belong to any club that would have me as a member. As
well, guys, as far as I know. Wonder why they want you.
They say what?
They wonder. You'd wonder why they want you.
Yeah, I know, because, I don't need to belong to anything, because as far as I'm concerned, I am my own person, and I own my own soul and my body. I don't have to be around anybody that I don't want to be, and I don't have to be influenced in terrible ways by people. So, you know, it's all just a system of trial and error. You learn what kind of people are, because how you do everything is how you do anything, you know. If you're sitting in a restaurant with somebody and they treat the waitress or the waiter really badly, yeah, don't go out to dinner with them or ever see them again, because they'll just be exactly the same to you one day. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest is Dr. Judy Wood. We're talking about 9/11 and the real evidence that's coming to light at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we'll be right back, folks.
look at me, driving and I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations, or let them all die in
celebration.
I'm all healed from the lacerations, have them all killed by assassination.
Thought on that day, my tower is secure and my reach is global. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show without Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the Vinny Eastwood Show.com. Just wanted to give a shout out to all the people down in the cha-cha. That's my word for Christchurch, because apparently the ground has been doing the cha-cha lately, and people that have died. And this country is so small because you don't have much degree of separation. Everybody in some roundabout way in this whole country, in some way, we all have relatives in Christchurch. So I think there's maybe a couple of million Kiwis overseas worldwide right now living in different countries and places. And they all feel for those people, and so does the whole world. And, you know, on behalf of New Zealanders and such like that, I'd like to thank the whole world for all the support that they've been sending. We've had support from Japan, Thailand, China, you know, you name it, man. US, UK, Aussies have just sent over 200 fabulous strapping young lads who are going to stalk the streets at night in their blue and Masonic checkered caps called the Brisbane Police. Our very special guest today is Dr. Judy Wood. And I'd like to ask her a question, which is, in fact, the title of a new book, so it's an interesting crossover of double meaning here. Where did the towers go? Because anybody who's seen the shots after the towers, there's basically nothing there, like other than ankle-high dust blanketing most of Manhattan. There was nothing left. What the hell was going on there? Where did the towers go? Dr. Judy Wood.
Yes, that is the question of the day, and then some. And it was the question of the day after as well. On my website for the book, it's called wheredidthetowersgo.com. All one word. It's hard to type. wheredidthetowersgo.com. If you click on media, there's a clip of George Stephanopoulos at the scene talking with Peter Jennings, who's in his studio. And Peter Jennings asks, well, where's all the debris gone? And George Stephanopoulos looks puzzled and says, well, it all just went down. And then it just evaporated.
Yeah. It's exploded into dust. And it's like the reason why the towers didn't come down by fire, in my opinion, and there's stark evidence, you know, and everybody's had this experience of using a barbecue. Not only did the steel not melt, but the barbecue also didn't explode into dust. And that's a controlled fire.
In addition to that, is, you know, you can see columns and beams and so forth flying through the air, and they wither away into nothing. They look like an effervescing Alka-Seltzer tablet.
And they moved with such force as well. There was a report of a 50-ton beam, that got flung half a kilometer into the face of an adjacent building.
There's nothing too shocking about horizontal distances at all. If you think of a quarter-mile-tall building, we've got to do some unit conversions here. Having a few pieces fall across the street is minimal. What I'd like to know is why the adjacent buildings are intact. For example, the post office, which was across the street from Building 7, didn't have a scratch on it. Not only that, the material didn't even spill across the street all the way. The sidewalk was still bare. That is a bigger question. And, you know, go ahead.
Well, you know, we're kind of asking questions, and what we really need is answers, you know. I mean, we all know something's up, And we all know that whatever evidence we've heard or whatever evidence we see is still not even concrete proof. So the fact of the matter is that the rest of us who have not done a real investigation firsthand, we don't know. All right. And I find that, that's the real point here that people need to understand about 9/11 is that the bulk of people simply don't know what's going on. They operate upon belief rather than fact. And I think that, I don't know, and in fact, maybe I'm being a bit supposed to this myself, where I operate under a lot of assumptions and beliefs and don't take so quite a cut and dry analytical approach to things. But when 3,000 people get incinerated and turned into powder, I think there's a reason that we have to at least step out of our comfort zone and approach the facts as the facts.
Exactly. And that is what is in my book. And it's for the world. It's my gift to the world. Someone needed to do it. And I remember telling my mother I was going to be doing this, and she said, well, if you do it, you won't have a career. And I said, if I don't do it, nobody will.
And what's in your book? And what's in your book? I mean, what's chapter one?
The introduction.
And, really?
Yeah, and about the pressure to conform. Just, you know, what the first impression is you have that day. Chapter two is my billiard ball example, which I think a lot of people may be familiar with, about the timing issue.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can just drop a billiard ball off the top of the tower and it'll reach the ground the same time that the towers did, or more or less.
The towers did not reach the ground. That's what becomes apparent. The ground shook. You know, from the seismic signal, the ground shook only 8 seconds when the North Tower went away. It takes 9.5 seconds for a billiard ball to hit the pavement in a vacuum.
So faster than the normal rate of descent.
It was, and it didn't descend. It just didn't reach the ground.
It evaporated in mid-air. Now, what has the ability?
I wouldn't say evaporate. The reason why I use, you know, the goofy language I use is
goofy.
Because, yeah, unusual language is because it is more scientific. If you don't know a mechanism, using a known term for a known mechanism to describe an unknown process is not scientific. And so that's why I don't use vaporize. Vaporize implies heat, and there's no evidence that heat was involved. So that's why, you know, you have a new phenomena, you need a new word to describe it. Dustification. That, you know, I can't be confused with anything else.
The building. Yeah.
So that's why I call it dustification. You know, it's not evaporation.
Okay. So the towers was just standing there one day, and then all of a sudden they dustificated.
Well, I think the
in midair.
That in their final demise, the pieces just came apart. Like the molecules. It was molecular dissociation. The molecules dissociate from each other. Instead of being attracted to each other, they began to repel each other. And they continued breaking down.
So how would you describe this?
Which?
The actual process of the towers dustifying.
Something extraordinary affects the way molecules attract each other. It's sort of like anti-gravity. You know how?
So somehow the molecules repelled each other, and it separated everything. Yeah.
Yes. And this,
what has the power to force molecules to repel each other?
Well, as I go through my book, all of the different phenomena, then in chapter 17, I get into how we can replicate the exact same thing.
And let's talk about that. If I was to replicate a device to simulate appropriately what happened, where the towers went, what machine would I need?
It is a whip machine.
Apparatus or whatever it is. How could you do that? What would I need in order to do that?
Well, this is not off-the-shelf technology that you can buy down at your corner store as a unit, you know, with a serial number. You have to build it yourself. But let's look at what exactly entails. What is the mechanism that's going on? And what it is an interference of different types of energy. And if you...
Like a Tesla death ray or something along those lines.
I don't know what anything about the Tesla, the death ray. What I'm talking about is, you know, I witnessed it before me, so I know it's real. John Hutchison he's tried to replicate Tesla's work. So Tesla isn't around now, so we can't go to Tesla's lab and watch him demonstrate it for us. But there's people who can replicate Tesla's work. So in the here and now, and John Hutchison is one, and what he used to use a Tesla coil and then interfere radio frequency signals within that static field created by the Tesla coil. He later began using a Van de Graaff generator and interferes radio frequency signals within the static field created by the Van de Graaff generator. So using that setup, all of the same weird phenomena that we saw at the WTC is replicated.
So we're talking about one device. What was it called? The something generator?
Oh, if you create
a Van de Graaff generator?
Yeah, that creates a static field.
Okay. So you have a static field plus radio frequency, and just talking layman's terms here, just for the audience's sake at least, it can beam onto any object or whatever, and then force the molecules to split apart.
Oh, it doesn't beam onto an object. This is a field effect.
Okay,
a magnetic field affects everything within that magnetic field.
How would you control the width or effect radius of that, because it was such a specific small area?
There are a lot of different issues to it. Here's another analogy. Think of when you take a photograph on photographic emulsion, you're not burning the image into a piece of paper. What you're doing with the light is controlling a chemical reaction that exists in the emulsion on the surface of the paper. So when you develop it, the silver stays in some places and it goes away in other places, depending on the chemical reaction caused by where the light was. And so the light controls where the chemical reaction takes place. The light is not all the energy. The light is just the control mechanism.
And okay, so you're talking about using a static field and radio signals to use as a control for matter?
Yeah, if you think of the static field as like the emulsion, the photographic emulsion.
Yeah.
And within that static field, you can trigger the reaction in different places, in different ways.
Okay. So it's kind of like a two-handed effect. The static field grabs hold with the one hand, and then the radio signal bashes it with the other kind of thing.
And you need both.
Yeah, because otherwise, basically, you wouldn't be able to control any of the output, would you? You wouldn't be able to control the effect area without a static field in place, and you wouldn't be able to control the level of destruction or dustification without the punch of the radio signals.
Now John Hutchison does this for good. You know? So the Hutchison effect cannot be the same thing, because he would never use it as a weapon. So... right there, it disqualifies it. But it's still energy that's directed. And John also uses it to have fun, you know, doing fun things. He isn't busy trying to figure out maximizing destruction per unit area kind of thing, and doesn't really write down you know, exactly what he's doing. He just has fun with it. And in doing so, it's different effects that happen in different places, and it's pretty interesting. It's like sometimes he gets levitation.
Did something happen to his neighbors while he was testing this thing by chance?
Yeah. Oops, there goes the plumbing.
More on that after the break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Whew. We've got Dr. Judy Wood here, and we're wondering, where did the towers go? VinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back.
Well, there's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you
absurdity. what? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print $100 and loan it to you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. We have a very special guest for you today, ladies and gentlemen. It is Dr. Judy Wood, the author of Where Did the Towers Go? The definitive investigation of what happened to the towers on 9/11. Now, just a quick summation. Now, we're up to the implementation of a particular static field mixed with radio signals emitted over the towers so that they were then held in a static form of some description. And then...
I'm not seeing that.
Just in layman's terms, this is basically what happened, but it's not the exact, you know, scientific definition. I'm just trying to work with me here, people, you know.
what I'm saying is
to get your head around.
What I've said is we have all of this evidence, and the evidence is the same as what is produced by this other.
Well, what is that evidence? Because the one thing that I find interesting about certain debates is there's two types of debates you will have where the subject of evidence is taken up. One when the word evidence is repeated, and one where evidence is actually given.
Very good point. This, it's hard to do it over the radio because there's, you know, images in the book. But there's various things that are identifiable. Like, for example, Chapter 3 is about the jumpers, what are termed the jumpers. And by the time you finish reading that chapter, you'll realize it isn't what we thought it was either. For example, a guy hanging outside of the 105th floor taking his pants off. How do you explain that?
Well, apparently in times of disaster, people have a lot of sex.
and if you look this
up, I'm joking, but yes.
Right. And they see a guy that's about 100 feet from the building. Now, world record oomph, you know, like for a standing broad jump, cannot get that far to get 100 feet from the building.
He landed 100 feet from
No, he's halfway down. There's a picture of this guy who's like 100 feet from the building.
All right.
How could he get that far? How could he get that far out? You know, the standing broad jump wouldn't get you enough of a launch speed to get that far out.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you explain that?
How would you explain that? Because you know, I need you to explain here, and by all means, explain away. Because this is all new to me, and I realize that whatever questions I ask may be fruitless next to hearing more information and elaboration on the particular subjects in question.
Right, and it takes also looking at the images a lot, but there's. The number of bodies, from the descriptions that the first responders gave, and also from the images you have, their quote was, it was like raining people. And I say it wasn't like raining people, it was like snowing people, because there's an accumulation. And this is not normal. And firefighters have never seen anything like this before. You know, maybe once or twice somebody has jumped, but not 1,200 people. And there is the number, estimated number of people leaving the building, you know, jump, whatever you want to call it, who came out of the buildings before the building's demise, equal approximately the same as the number of samples, unique samples of DNA. In other words, it seems that the only identifiable DNA samples came from, quote, jumpers, and not from people that still left in the buildings.
Continue.
And so there's a lot of...
You'll have to go and hang that one up, love.
Yeah. They can leave a message.
Yeah. So you might want to just actually take that off the hook, please, honey.
Yeah, I'll.
Yeah, because that's just going out live on 26 AM FM stations that's worldwide with 100,000 plus listeners. You know,
right, they'll give up.
No, yeah. But you okay. know, in either case, let's talk about this. We've had lots and lots of jumpers. They come real far out, and they're snowing as well. You know, and they're kind of
and they're taking their clothes off. They're dustifying,
and they're feeling. Why are they taking their clothes off?
Well, this guy in the 105th floor is one that really got to me. A bunch of other ones in the other windows already were without pants or without shirts. But this guy who's hanging by a foot in a hand, taking his pants off outside the window of the 105th floor, is puzzling. So if I were there and the building was on fire, I'd first run to the bathroom before we lost water pressure, get my clothes wet, get extra clothing wet, wrap around my head and head for the door. So I'd be wet. If there's a fire and sprinklers came on, I'd be wet. If there's a fire and the sprinklers didn't come on, I'd be sweating and I'd be wet. Any way you look at it, you're wet.
And everybody that came out was dry as a bone. You might have said they were so dry that they turned to dust. Very, very strange. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, our very special guest, the author of Where Did the Towers Go, in somewhat of a poofing effect, is our very special guest for the next hour as well. And we'll be right back after the short messages on the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, American Freedom Radio, and GorillaMedia.co.nz, proudly broadcasting live from the future in the shakingest city in the world. It's Auckland, New Zealand. Oh, wait. The second most shakingest city in New Zealand. We'll be right back.
Unity is what we need, with peace and love and harmony. Unity is strength and assured success.
Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. Our extremely fabulous and special guest joining us for this hour as well as Dr. Judy Wood. Welcome back to the program. We have one thing that we'd like to sort of close in this little short segment here about why were people not standing in the windows with their shirts off and being wet and whatnot?
Well, they were likely wet for all the reasons that I had stated. But why would they hang out the windows taking their clothes off? In a fire, firefighters wear heavy fireproof coats to protect themselves from fire. Clothing protects you from fire. So why would these guys want to be taking their clothes off? But if for some bizarre reason they need to take their clothes off, and maybe they're hanging outside because of smoke, well, hold the breath, step inside, take the pants off, then step back outside. Why must they take the pants off while hanging outside, dangling from the 105th story? There's only one reason I can see, is that there's some sort of field effect in there. And if you are familiar with, for example, the active denial system, which is a kind of a microwave field, that it controls crowds, makes them go away when they aim it at them, it's many, many, many times worse if you have wet clothing or wet skin. So if you are wet in such a field, you'd want to take your clothes off.
Yeah. Well, so whoa. Is that true though? Like, if they had those static field sort of microwave gun sort of things that they're going to use on crowds now in the during the collapse of the U.S., it actually is much worse if you're wet.
Yes, think of a piece of paper towel in your microwave oven. If it's wet, it gets cooked. If it's dry, nothing happens to it.
Wow. But then again, we're made of moisture and all of that kind of stuff. I guess it would be a kind of compound effect with your blood boiling and the water boiling on your skin, wouldn't it?
Probably so. This is, I'm not saying that is what it was, but it's all consistent with that. But what it actually shows is that something else was going on there. Also, there's testimony of a firefighter looking out the window and watching a body fly by, on the way down, and watch it to, quote, a cloud of red before it hits the ground.
Whoa.
And the bodies were just too dismembered for, just falling.
Interesting stuff. What happened to the jumpers and where did the towers go? You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Our very special guest is Dr. Judy Wood. Check out the archives at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. And fabulous articles at GorillaMedia.co.nz and support the show. We'll be right back.
with a little justification. We'll punch your face in.
You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show, where it's all about organized crime on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Our fabulous guest joining us for this hour is Dr. Judy Wood, the author of Where Did the Towers Go? The Definitive Investigation of 9/11. Welcome back.
Thank you. I mentioned the book is available at wheredidthetowersgo.com. All one word, wheredidthetowersgo.com.
Talking about the jumpers now, the last thing you said was that a firefighter's first-hand account witnessed a body, quote, turn into a red cloud. Tell us about that.
He was in shock because it's something very surprising to have seen and to witnessed. And
it was 9/11.
yeah. Here's the particular statement he said. As I was looking out the window, which is a total of 5 seconds, he was saying before that, I didn't need to see that. It says, another jumper comes by, kind of clipped the edge of the roof and just vaporized. The guy disappeared. There's no longer body, just a big cloud of red. And he said, I didn't need to see that. It was a total of 5 seconds. I was looking out that window, total. It was like he was freaked out by it. He was looking out of Tower 1 over the Marriott, which is a 22-story building. And so there was a bunch of bodies on top of that building. But he just clipped the edge of the roof and turned into a cloud of red.
What was it called? The Gennheiser generator, I forget the name.
Oh, a Van de Graaff generator.
Van de Graaff. What is it? Okay, a Van de Graaff generator, and just for the audience again, it's generates a static field and then punches through that static field with radio waves and then forces the molecules to kind of repel each other. And essentially, it causes dustification.
Right? No, a Van de Graaff generator just creates a static field. That's all it does is create a static field.
Where's the other element, radio signals coming from? Are we talking about HARP here, like a billion watts or something, of radio energy coming in?
We're told what HARP is. We don't really know what it is, but what we're told is not capable of what happened. This is very, very carefully focused. I can just say I've seen a demonstration of how John Hutchison does it, which is interfere radio frequency signals within the static field. And that interference is what causes these weird effects. It causes material to come apart. It causes levitation. It causes lift or disruption, one or the other. And what we see on 9/11 is flipped cars or toasted cars. I call them toasted as in they're toast, they're history. They're not repairable. But you don't have flipped toasted cars. You have flipped or toasted. Lift or disruption, which is pretty interesting. Up to a half mile away, there are cars that went into spontaneous combustion for no apparent reason.
Okay. Well, let's think about this in terms of what the agenda would be. I mean, this is not a technology that the average person is familiar with at all.
And so it's to cover up.
Yeah, exactly. So it's covered up. Covered up by whom? I mean, because we all know that the NIST report that came out was a load of baloney. And there's still holes and everything in 9/11 truth, and essentially it's a free play out there. It seems that nobody knows what's really going on.
There are some because they know what needs to be covered up. When I first started talking about the building turning to powder in mid-flight, I was ridiculed, heavily ridiculed. And the rumors were initiated saying, oh, she's talking about ray beams from space or space beams. Which is not the case. And those rumors have been propelled very strongly now
Indeed. Speaking of which, you've earned yourself a nickname. Is that correct?
Yeah. Certain people call me Marvin the Martian. it's all about ridicule, and that is a very easy way to control it, to cover it up.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's called the ad hominem argument when you don't point your evidence at the facts and try and talk about what actually happened. Instead, you ridicule the person, you know. And it's just a dirty tactic, and you know, nobody should engage in that. No real truther would actually revert to ad hominem attacks, really.
Hopefully, but it's worked. It's worked up to this point. It was in 2005 I first started posting information. In 2006 is when I really started. That's when I started talking about building turning to powder in mid-flight, and when I was called, you know, Marvin the Martian and Ravens in Space and Space Beams. Oh, it was interesting. I even had somebody from Kirtland Air Force Base email me, scolding me. He said, I've been looking on your website and you have stuff about ray beams from space knocking down the towers. I said, really? I think it's to the contrary. I have a statement on such and such page, you know, that says my detractors use this term. And, you know, please tell me where you saw it from. The guy the next day emailed back, and I have a great deal of respect for him. He said, I saw it on a forum, a blog or something. I assumed it was true. My apologies. It wasn't true.
But why is it that you take the single account of a firefighter saying that a body turned into a cloud of red and not all the other accounts of, say, you know, planes flying into the building?
I've read you one account. I also have a picture that shows what this fellow is describing. And I have quite a few pictures that are matched up with descriptions given. You know, like, there's a leg on the sidewalk. How do you explain that leg on the sidewalk?
Well, you know, and that mixes in with another account that I heard that a person was walking through the towers, and, you know, before the towers had even come down or anything, and there were just bodies, body parts littered all over the place.
That's right. That's right. This is true. It's what, you know, I don't look at it as I'm trying to debunk somebody or promote a theory or whatever. It's put yourself in the position of your life depends on your getting as close as you can to the truth, to figuring out the truth, the best of your ability. Now, I'm not going to pick, you know, put a whole lot on one particular picture, but if I have 10 pictures from 10 different photographers from 10 different directions that all point to the same thing, I'm starting to be more convinced of it. It's as though you look at the images and you put yourself right there. You can taste the air. You can feel it. You can smell it. You can, you know, you can hear it. You're part of the scene. Once you get enough of a perspective of what's going on where, I know who is standing where, when, and, you know, and who should have known so-and-so because they're at the same place at the same time. But there's certain statements that come out of someone's mouth that, you know, need explaining. Now, also, humans, based on their past experience, try to fit future events into their past experience. And, like,
Well, it's like when people come up with something that they can't explain, they try and explain it with something that's already happened before. You know, like, oh, it could be that, so it must be. And then they just kind of go merrily along.
And they keep assuming that that's what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I base my life under the assumption that everything I know is in fact wrong, and I just haven't had the evidence presented to me. You know, so even if I'm proved wrong, then I'm right about being wrong.
But for example, the story we heard for so many years about steel-toed boots melting. I don't know if you've heard that one. There's a woman who works for FEMA who's telling, you know, on film, telling somebody about the steel-toed boots of the workers are melting within 2 hours, or within just a few hours, and that gets repeated as though that's proof of high heat. Well, if you stop and think about it, no, just repeat it. Think about it. Now, this gal wasn't lying. That was just the best she could put together with the information she had that, based on her previous experience in life.
Yeah, I mean, what she should have said is it looks like it was melted.
Right, but she's not a scientist. She just, you know, goes with what she can go with. But let's think about it. If, you know, if my oven is melting, my steel oven is melting, the turkey inside is well done. So how do you have steel-toed boots melting and there's no reports at all of feet burning?
Yeah. Well,
but
you know,
there's something happening to the steel in those steel-toed boots. I'm, you know, there must be because there's enough stories of it. Things
well, and again, speaking of stories disintegrating,
yeah.
we have a quarter mile tall building here.
Where'd it go?
Where did it go? All right, so it, dustification is what happened to it. I mean, and there is clear evidence that there is enough dust that was shattered around the lower part of Manhattan at that time. So that would explain where it went. But how did it actually end up like that is what people really need to hear, Judy.
And also the fact that it continued breaking down once it landed. If you're standing upwind from the World Trade Center complex, 15 minutes after the North Tower goes poof, the dust has settled, you're looking at clear blue sky off in the distance to the west. You know, obviously the dust has settled. And then pretty soon you notice around the firefighters' feet and policemen's feet, the fuzzballs, I call it. It's the haze of fine powder coming up. And then pretty soon you notice it's coming up all by itself. Well, if it was that fine, it could not have settled out of the air in that shorter time. It had to have been coarse dust that landed and continued breaking down.
How does dust become dust and then continue to become even dustier, mind you?
It finer and finer. It got so fine. You hear about the sick people, all those people who are inhaling it, and those dust masks wouldn't have done a thing. We're talking about dust that is so fine, it's to the order of DNA.
Well, just like depleted uranium, for example, you know, conventional gas masks and things like that, the particles are so small, they come in anyway. You need full hazmat suits.
Right. And if it was a normal collapse or if it was from bombs in the building, you don't get particles that small that are a fraction of the size of a red blood cell. It just inhales right into your bloodstream.
So, whoa, hold on a second here. All right, let's just walk through the sequence of events. There was an event that the media tells us that were planes entering into a building, and then media tells us that they exploded. And then there's footage that appears as though it might be burning and smoking, and then the towers suddenly go poof after only an hour or two under the other assumed incidences. Yeah. So there's no possibility that even if there were planes there and even if they were fully laden with fuel, there's no possibility that they could have accomplished what they were reported to have accomplished in that particular scenario anyway. So let's take the planes and the explosion out of the picture. They're basically irrelevant.
They're misnomers.
I mean, who cares whether or not they hit? The point is, even if they did, it couldn't have done jack like what happened.
A friend of mine said it well. He said if someone was punched in the face, an hour later their head exploded, who cares if it was a real punch or a fake punch or what kind of punch it was? It's irrelevant to the head exploding.
It's my ancient judo master 5-hour punch blast hit.
Right. And I'm looking at the back cover of my book right now. That's, you know, wherethetowersgo.com is available, or also from a link on my homepage, which is drjudywood.com. And in this picture, it shows what's missing and all the buildings around it, and pretty much, you know, pristine condition. A few scratches here and there on some of them. But, you know, like the post office had no damage to it. And, you know, the Verizon building just had a, you know, one little thing in the front, but compared to what should have happened,
it's nothing that a shovel and brush can't handle, in other words.
Yeah, and here you have southern Manhattan with quarter-mile tall buildings. If they tipped over, it'd take out, you know, the south tip of Manhattan.
Exactly, and in Christchurch now we have a, I don't know, I think it was when we were like 24-something stories. I don't know, it's a pretty big building, one of the tallest buildings in the city, that's threatening to fall over, and they say it might crush like virtually an entire city block, okay? And so my suggestion was, or in fact I got this suggestion from a guy named Steve Hart of Viewfinder Magazine, that why don't we just light some small office fires up the top of that building, and I'm sure it'll collapse into its own footprints in an hour.
Right. And notice what an earthquake does. Now, if you have, you know, two 500,000-ton buildings crashing to the earth, aren't you going to damage the water
Well, the news has said that if it did actually fall down, it would be like another earthquake happening in the CBD. That's why it would cause so much damage. And you have a look at 9/11, and my goodness, virtually no damage to other buildings comparative to what happened to the towers themselves. It was like magic. You know,
exactly.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they're pulling a rabbit static field out of the hat kind of thing. Hoorah, here we go.
There's that quote by Arthur C. Clarke: any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic.
Yeah, exactly. And the U.S. military, and not to mention other militaries around the world, let's not forget, have advanced research programs to technology that the human mind of the average person couldn't even conceive of existing.
And this technology has been demonstrated for at least the past, you know, at least 100 years ago. And there's a patent on some aspects of it. That's in my book as well. But think about the pyramids, how they were built.
Well, and it's interesting you should say that, because a British journalist traveled down the Nile doing a little travel show, and she asked the man on one of the boats how the pyramids got built, and he said he tapped the 200-ton stones with a wand and floated them all the way back up on thin air up to the pyramids in Portugal. Isn't that interesting? You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with Guerrilla Media. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and internationally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's unconventional news. Our very special guest for today is Dr. Judy Wood, the writer of one of the, basically the definitive investigation of 9/11, over 500 pages stock full of evidence. And the difficulty we were discussing over the break in covering this topic on such a short time of show, you know, we've only got 2 hours, it's impossible to cover that much information and that much evidence to lay out, to make the story all make sense. All right, and that's the difficult position Judy's in here, and why she may not be a little more forthcoming and making great claims and things of this nature, because then people could just kind of use that against her to discredit her, saying, oh, you've got no evidence or anything like that. Well, we would, except you have to kind of read the book or who knows, maybe there'll be a 10 or 20 or 50-hour presentation at some point in the future.
There's plenty of, but the book is pretty easy to read. It's written like a textbook. It's very organized with descriptions, everything referenced. Can't think of how many zillions of references there are in there. But something I'd like to pick up on that you were talking about in the last segment about the pyramids. You know, there was a technology used to build the pyramids, and that technology was also used earlier in the 1900s in Florida, Coral Castle. This fellow, Ed Leedskalnin, cut out blocks of coral and lifted those stones. They're approximately the same size, some are much heavier than the largest stones in the Great Pyramid. And he built this castle, and he sculpted all. This guy is about 100 pounds. This little guy, and what he lifted it with is this tripod with a few little chains on it that have no way can they lift that kind of weight. And there's a lot of very interesting stories about it, this using these field effects to move the stones. And so people have heard the song by Billy Idol, Sweet 16.
I can't specifically remember it, but I'd probably know it if I heard it.
It's about Ed Leedskalnin. He supposedly left his Sweet 16 and whatnot, but there's all these allusions made to Coral Castle, and that is where it was filmed on location, the Billy Idol's video of playing the song. So it's pretty interesting. I like a quote that he said, "It's not difficult, really. The secret is in knowing how." And he knew the secret.
So what is this? You said that this technology was being used to build the pyramids and being used way back then. Now, what specifically is it? Is there a patent for this? Or?
Yeah, no. There's a patent on a particular thing of the static field generated that levitates things. George Pigott or Pigot, I don't know how to pronounce his name, who got a patent on it. That's the same thing that John Hutchison does here and now, in levitating things. But sometimes you get disruption and sometimes you get disintegration. Sometimes it's an ongoing effect that doesn't stop, like with Bankers Trust, why they're still working on taking Bankers Trust down in New York. There's so many interesting things about this, but let's go back to Tesla. Tesla interferes, or moves a conductor through a magnetic field to generate electricity. That is how we power our homes. That's how a hydroelectric power plant works. So people could say that is magic. How do you get electricity out of a waterfall? People would say that's pretty strange, but it's this interaction between things. And if you've seen Boy Scouts, once you were one, get a nail and wrap a coil around it. I remember it from, I used to go to Boy Scout meetings with my friend, whose dad was the Scoutmaster. And you see how many how many paper clips you can pick up with a nail. You coil a wire around the nail, plug it into a 9-volt battery, and it becomes an electromagnet. So you can turn electricity into magnetism, and magnetism into electricity. They interact. So does gravity. And it causes various other effects. Then we also have, someone might think it's totally unrelated, but on 9/11 we had a Category 3 hurricane right outside of New York City that was underreported. Now, why was that? 15 minutes before the North Tower got its hole, there was no exciting event yet going on. Why was the media not reporting this hurricane? Yet on the weather map, they showed that patch of the ocean. They just didn't show a hurricane there. And the field effects extended over to New York City. There was thunder reported at the adjacent airports around Manhattan. And some very strange, field effects going on there. So there's evidence of that. There's all these odd things. And you start looking at, okay, what do tornadoes do? What do hurricanes do? Where does the energy come from that's in a tornado? And look what it can do. It can slice buildings in half. It can lift cars up and leave them on top of trees. Weird things. If you could replicate the effects of a tornado and control where it happens, you'd have a pretty powerful weapon, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, let's think about this, and this is just, pure speculation on my part. Let's say you've got a tornado machine, right? And the tornado goes right down on the tower, and it's so strong, it's like Category 10 rather than Category 5, which is like a finger of God, apparently. And it just basically just goes... And it just flattens everything and just turns it all into dust. I can see that happening, but...
It's a tornado, that's a natural one. You see something happening, you see this funnel cloud. But what happens if you have the field effects from one without the visual of it?
Yeah, exactly. Because the thing that gives it its visual is water vapor and dirt and then particulates that the tornado actually picks up through the clouds and the ground that it connects with. If you were talking just an energy field sort of like that, but without all the particulates sucking up into it and rotating as they do, but the pure energy and raw power of it, yeah, I could see that happening.
That's it. And also, when a tornado is nearby, things break inside in your home. There's pressure differences, there's other strange effects that go on.
Okay.
We're taught in elementary school in a region where there's often tornadoes, we have this routine you go through with tornado drills, and the kid sitting in the front left seat, it was his job to go open those windows to relieve the pressure differential, so the windows would not explode and you have glass flying around.
Yeah. Well, see, I mentioned Dmitry Khalazov to you earlier. He says that there was a thermonuclear device planted 70 meters below the ground, and then when it explodes, it creates about 100 meter in diameter sort of sphere or hole or kind of thing in an egg shape. And as the top of the egg shape then goes in through the the basement of the World Trade Center. Let me finish, please.
Okay.
And then the shockwave goes up about 8 seconds before, which is why in a lot of cameras you see them kind of rumble a little bit before the towers kind of whoomph, poof. And then he says then a crush wave, which is a secondary part of a nuclear detonation, goes up and then causes all the towers to collapse, and the hole down the bottom of it is where all the debris went. What do you think of that?
First of all, the towers were built in the Hudson River with kind of a dike built around them called the bathtub. It's a water-retaining wall. So the towers were 70 feet below the water table. If you had something exploding below the towers, why wouldn't you have a destruction of that bathtub or even a leak of it?
Apparently it was down in the granite bedrock.
And the PATH train that comes over from New Jersey
And the workers who were in the hole, the retaining wall and the bedrock was actually being pushed inwards by the Hudson. So yes, it's actually very true what you say that the pressures from the Hudson are immense, but apparently they held for some reason.
You're right. How do you have below this bathtub? It goes through the bathtub, destroys the towers, but doesn't damage the bathtub at all. 2 days after 9/11, they had earth moving equipment around the area, and that was damaging the bathtub. You know, earth moving equipment damaged the bathtub at 2 500,000-ton buildings going poof, you know, didn't. They turned to dust in midair and did not crash to the ground. Building 7 is even more dramatic because Building 7, there was virtually no seismic signal associated with the demise of the building. There were some seismic stations that where you could not pick up a signal out of background noise. A couple of stations you could, and they determined it to be a 0.6 on the Richter scale, which is equivalent to a jackhammer on the pavement. Not a 47-story building. Yes, one jackhammer. And each of the 47 stories is about the size of the football field. And with all the steel on each one of those crashing to the ground, it should be like raining dump trucks,
and Christchurch. I mean, if that building, the Grand Chancellor Hotel fell over, they're saying that it would create another big earthquake of sorts, you know, just to the surrounding area and basically flatten the block. But you know, have a look at the Twin Towers, nothing.
And one of the great cover-up tools is false opposition. So we set up, you know, the bombs in the building crowd versus NIST. So NIST then annihilates the bombs in the building crowd by saying it was whisper quiet demise of the building, so it couldn't be bombs in the building. Well, it couldn't be the NIST story either. They just, you know, destroyed their own story if they applied the same logic to it, because it should sound like raining dump trucks if you had this building collapsing.
Hold on. Are you ascertaining that NIST applies logic?
Yeah, but and I called them on that too. They had no answer for it. It didn't even spill across the street. So you have this building that goes away, whisper quiet. You know, Houston, we have a problem. Something here more seriously wrong. And it appears that the building really, you know, was kind of dissolving all afternoon and blowing away in the wind. You saw all this material coming out of just one face of the building abruptly, which is another strange thing, because on the corner, why don't you have this open hole? If it was fire causing smoke from within, it would be pouring out every orifice it could get to, you know, with the least resistance. You don't have a log jam and the smoke not wanting to come out a window because it doesn't like that side of the building. What it appears is that the stuff in the building, I call it fumes because we don't know what it was, is not pushing its way out. It's being pulled out, which is why it prefers one face of the building. If you look at those pictures, see if that looks strange to you, that from ground to roof, one entire face of the building has stuff pouring out of it, but not the adjacent side.
Yeah. Go on.
So there's, you know, strange things with that, and the lack of seismic signal is a biggie. You know, how do you drop a building to the ground and have no associated seismic thunk with it?
Well, with all due respect, you tell me.
Because dust doesn't make a thud when it lands.
Ah, that's right. Because, you know, and that's the interesting thing. A lot of people, the inside job sort of aspect and the controlled demolition aspect, you know, I get it. Sounds reasonable. But the problem is it can't turn it into dust while it's in midair and then make it keep breaking down while it's already on the ground. Okay, it cannot do that, so it doesn't stack up in a lot of ways. So, and like Einstein said, if one part of my theory is bunk, the whole theory is bunk.
Right, like the nuclear stuff under the basement. Why don't you have a seismic signal associated with a nuclear bomb going off?
Yeah, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I'm a very special guest, is Dr. Judy Wood from WhereDidTheTowersGo.com. You can listen to the archives at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll be right back after the break. Final segment coming up.
The wind is going to be.
To the Vinnie Eastwood Show without Will on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, brought to you in proud collaboration with GorillaMedia.co.nz. I want to give a shout out to several people, you know, our fabulous people at AFR, particularly that man Danny Romero, cruising around all the time, busting his keister to make American Freedom Radio keep on chugging along. Our fabulous board ops, Dan and Adam, and also the crew at the Vinnie Eastwood Show, our somewhat fabulous producer, Mitch. Big shout out to him. Big one. Yeah, yes, massive one. And also my somewhat dreary and somewhat depressing co-host Will. I'm just joking, of course. I love Will. And also our pretty amazing associate producer Chris, who's been posting articles to Guerrilla Media. He's been quite a good editor there on the website, I would have thought. you know, pretty fantastic, working like a dog, as we all are. And, you know, it's the interesting thing about this job, you know, very, very little monetary reward for it. And, you know, being a former salesman and making copious quantities of cash, I noticed the difference. And I like it better when I'm not having to go out and lie to people for money. Speaking of not lying to people for money, our very special guest, Dr. Judy Wood, joins us for the final segment. And one thing that we talked about over the ads was global warming. And I'd like you to share with the audience what you shared with me about how you draw a line of best fit with a graph, ladies and gentlemen. You know, you got your x-axis and your y-axis down the bottom, and you got your data, and you draw a line along the different points to see where it's kind of going. What do you reckon about that?
Well, what they have is two data points about a nanometer apart, and they're extrapolating it out. They try to draw a line through it, and then they're extrapolating it out by a few miles. Yeah, if they have, you know, how many significant digits in their thermometer in the past few years, how can they compare it to what they had 200 years ago? And how well calibrated were those instruments then? And especially, you know, people say that there's a whole lot more hurricanes now than there used to be. Well, they didn't have satellites, you know, 100 years ago. So how could they have known how many hurricanes there were unless they made sure? So it's already, you know, biased. You can see more hurricanes because you can see them from the satellites.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like we had, you know, these satellites made out of wood and hemp floating out there, you know, during the 1800s. You know? Oh, take a sketch of that one, Johnny. Oh, yes, yes, yes. The global cooling this year is producing a lot more severe storms, sir.
and now they measure something to, you know, three decimal places and compare it to something that was, you know, wasn't even measured to one decimal place, you know, a few hundred years ago, and they're extrapolating it out by miles, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, and they're also reducing the amount of data they collect as well now. The ground-based surveillance or atmospheric modifying or whatever devices they had in Canada, I think there was like 114 of them, and they reduced that to 9. They just left the ones that were in the cities that had the urban heat island effect.
yeah, you have the concrete slabs that, you know, collect heat better. And you're measuring something different than you used to measure.
Yeah, so isn't that nice, you know? You can't actually tell the difference between what you're looking at and what's being put in front of you that's BS.
That's what's getting trickier and trickier. It's going to be harder and harder to tell. And so whatever they want public opinion to be, it gets turned into that, just like with 9/11.
Yeah, and there seems to be this false debate going on right now about whether it was controlled demolition or whether or not it was the towers and the fires and kind of thing. And I say, whenever I'm given two choices, I always have to ask, what's choice number three, and how come I wasn't given that option?
Yeah, it's a multiple choice test where they don't give you the right answers to choose from.
Yeah, well, you know what I'd like to see, Jody, is multiple choice questions where they have an other box where you can write in a new one, mm-hmm. You know, to facilitate some description of, I don't know, creativity.
But it seems like our educational system has, you know, grown people up on multiple choice tests where it's digital thinking. And they don't know how to think outside the test questions or outside the test options.
Well, like they say in The Matrix, it's no different from the rules of a computer program. Some can be bent, others can be broken. Believe me, you can break a lot of things by thinking.
Oh, don't do that. You're not so easily controlled when you think.
Oh, yeah. Well, why do you think, ladies and gentlemen, in fact, you know, interesting, you know, why do you think that everybody's kind of a bit silly and doesn't question things? You think that just happened by accident? No. the society that's been bringing them up has taught them that doing that is a waste of time. And I'd have to agree with it, you know. Thinking is an absolute waste of time, and it's not worth the effort.
And how are you rewarded for thinking?
Yeah, exactly. All you get is enlightenment and eternal happiness. Oh, that's just too much of a stretch.
but you lose your job if you get outside the lockstep, you know, where they want you to go.
Oh, that happened to me several times. I remember one time I wrote a 7-page essay about what was wrong with the company that I was working with.
Not so good.
And we got the execs into a room and talked with them about it, and then the head of the chairman just got a phone call, and then he buggered off, and nothing was done about my concerns or anything like that. And then about a couple of weeks later, they paid me $3,000 to leave.
Oh, that's nice when they give you extra.
Oh, yeah, but I had to promise to never say what company it was or nor talk about it with any other company.
Oh. Yeah, okay, so they bite your silence.
Yeah, exactly, and I hadn't had a summer holiday in a long time, so I thought three grand was quite nice. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest has been Dr. Judy Wood. You can read her book, if you get it, at wheredidthetowersgo.com. Some incredible research and information in there, I've been led to believe. Thank you very much, Doctor, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been borderlining on fabulous, love. Now, you have yourself a fabulous weekend, and everybody else, you do so too. I implore you, because it's the only time, it's the only freedom you get from that drudgery of work. And we'll see you again sometime.